Hello and welcome to this week's Football Fans Podcast with me, your host Jordan. On the pod this week, we'll be talking about Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. Is his appointment now as the Manchester United manager more sentiment over being sensible? We'll also be talking a little bit about what's happening in Scottish football. We'll also be talking about Cardiff City, and we'll be comprising a Football Fans Podcast Seasons 11 between myself and my panel here this week. And I've got a full house of guests this week on the pod, starting with a couple of United fans, one of whom is making their debut. Sam, how you doing, sir?
I'm very good. It's very nice to be here, Jordan.
Thank you for coming on. I've seen you in the reserves for a little while. You've been doing well, giving the call up. Debut, how you feeling?
Yeah, you've been sort of jabbing me in the ribs for a little while, haven't you? Every time that United have a bad result. It's time for me to put the record straight
I think it is. Our other United fan is a returning Mr. Marvin. Marvin, what are you saying?
I'm well, sir. Thank you for having me back. It's been a long time.
Well, I was going to say, it has been a long time. I've taken it a bit personal. Like, you haven't been here for a while, but I just thought maybe
Kids. I've got a balance. Like, you can't come and do a podcast when the wife's drowning in nappies, because the minute you go, I don't fancy changing that one, she's like, oh, but you've got time for a podcast, eh? So you've got a balance.
The bargaining chips go down a little bit.
Pick your battles. So I'm happy to be here. Shout out to my wife. You're a star, an angel. Yeah, probably haven't got time to listen to this because you're drowning in nappies, but I'll play this bit back for you.
All good. Good to have you back here. We're also joined by a regular Chelsea fan, Gabriel. Gabriel, talk to me.
Yeah, you know, probably the one team who got a chance in Europe this year, so
in a good mood.
No, all good. When you say Europe, you're talking about the Europa.
Europe is Europe.
Things people take pride in nowadays.
Europe is Europe.
I've known you for a long time. When the foot boot was on the other foot, you were talking about the Europa the same way you're talking about it now, that's for sure.
If you've not already subscribed to the podcast, please do so. We're also across all the socials, Instagram, Facebook and Twitter. Right, let's get into our drive-bys for the week. You know the rules by now. You get 1 minute and 1 minute no more. And the only rule is you cannot be interrupted by anybody else on the panel. Let's start with you, Sam. Simple one. Give us your most disappointing player of the season so far.
Ooh, that's an interesting question. Who's been the most disappointing player so far this season? I would say that if you have a look at recent form, I'd go with Hugo Lloris of Spurs. I think that you're talking about a goalkeeper that has won a World Cup, that is 32, that should be in the prime of his career, that probably should be up there with one of the world's best, and I think up until relatively recently was considered one of the world's best goalkeepers by a lot of people, probably not you, Jordan, as an Arsenal fan.
But not even that, I've never rated him.
A lot of observers have rated Lloris as a top goalkeeper, and you would think that by now he would be sort of cemented as one of the Premier League's better goalkeepers, one of the all-time best goalkeepers in the Premier League, and he's just not done it this season. He made another high-profile mistake at the weekend in the last minute at a crucial time, and even though he still pulls out the odd cracking save, he makes too many mistakes, and you have to say that there have been times this season where he's massively let Spurs down. It's not just his goalkeeping, shot-stopping, but it's also his distribution as well. His handling's been poor. He just doesn't seem like the goalkeeper that he once was. And I think with when you're Spurs and you haven't spent any money in the window and you're relying on current players, you've got to be relying on your goalkeeper to be getting him out of jail from time to time. And it just hasn't happened with Lloris this season.
Just briefly, do you think Lloris's dip this season? I've never been a Lloris fan, but this year he's really, really, I think everyone else is seeing now that he's not having a great year. Do you think it's in part due to the fact they've not brought in better squad players to push people like Lloris, and there's certain players that have maybe plateaued because there's no competition behind them?
Yeah, possibly. I mean, I think it's been a bit of a precipitous fall for Hugo Lloris, and I think part of the reason is they haven't got an established number two behind him. Although, number two goalkeeper is one of those really difficult positions because the goalkeepers knows they're going to come in and they're not going to be featuring much.
It's hard to have a very good number two.
It is, yeah. And I mean, I think the majority of the top four seem to have a number two who they do try and trust in various different competitions. Spurs have played Gazzaniga in the cups, and he's done all right, actually, to be fair, when he's featured. You might wonder whether it might be time for him to come in a bit now. But yeah, maybe I think the lack of movement in the transfer window has certainly meant that certain Spurs players seem to be in a bit of a comfort zone at the moment. I don't think that's necessarily a good thing.
It's caught up with them for sure. Marvin, let's come to you next. I know that you can't stand Neil Warnock. I know you're not a fan of his at all. Mr. Brexit, yeah. But did you have any sympathy for him yesterday?
Yeah, absolutely. I think I had sympathy for fans of the Premier League, really. I just think the stakes are so high. We're talking about relegation. We're talking about Europe. And I'm comfortable with a missed elbow or a little trip that someone didn't see or this and that. But an offside as blatant as that from that passage of play, which basically was a corner, ref, fair enough, but the lino, he's got to do a job there. And it was weird because when I saw it, I was like, even in real time, it looked offside. But let me have another look, because you know that sometimes defenders just get a bit lost. And then when you see the replay, it looks a million times worse, right? And they're on the line. Chelsea, I think, were there for the taking. And that one decision swung the whole game. Plus the Rudiger, which I thought was a professional foul, right? Mm-hmm. It was the last man. It's coming together.
He knows what he's doing.
I don't even know what the keeper was doing. He was going for a waltz anyway, right? And the funny thing is, right, no disrespect to any Cardiff forwards, but I'm not sure he's going to score. Do you know what I mean? It's not like they're the most prolific in front of goal. So I'm not sure it needed to be done. So I think those two decisions in itself, the fact they left with nothing, I haven't got sympathy for Warnock because, as you know, I can't stand him. Yep, He's a dinosaur. Yep. He's the sort of manager that we need out of the game if we want to progress. But I had sympathy for Cardiff and I had sympathy for the impact that that might cause, which will ultimately mean Chelsea might get Champions League, Cardiff might go down. It's as big as that decision, in my opinion.
I hear you. Let's stay on that game. Is Sarri trying to get sacked, or is that too simplistic a conclusion or assertion?
I mean, if it's not consciously trying to get sacked, so maybe subconsciously is, because I think it's almost like everyone in the world can see certain things and he just can't. He does the same thing every week. We pass it quite safely around the back, but can't do anything moving forward. We've got players on the bench like Ruben and Callum, who actually have pace and could maybe turn the man a bit quicker, but he goes with the same guys, makes the same substitutions. And it just seems that no matter how much criticism he gets or how much obvious things and people, I think journalists pointing out things to him makes things worse because he digs his heel in. And I mean, what he was saying about Callum, about, you know, his England performance and only watching 20 minutes, I was astounded. It was kind of like when sometimes my girlfriend wants to be petty and she talks about one of her friends or something. It was blatantly trying to kind of like, you know, say, Southgate, you don't know what you're talking about, but just running over the poor little 18-year-old guy who's just made the biggest performance of his career. So yeah, he's doing his best.
Just in a word, do you think he will be there next season?
No, I don't think he will.
Okay. Right, let's get into our first topic of the pod, guys. Let's start with United. It was announced last week that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer has been installed as the permanent manager of Manchester United. And the question I posed at the top there, is this sentiment or sensible? Let me start with you, Sam. First of all, do you think this is a decision that has been led by sentiment, or do you think, considering what he's done so far, it's a sensible option to appoint him and give him the job full time?
Yeah, I think it's been dictated by results. I don't think that it's necessarily just sentiment that's done it. I think that he has picked up a lot of fan support. He already had fan support before he came in through the door, to be fair, because he's a club legend, obviously. But he certainly has done himself no harm with the results that he's picked up. He's, you know, he went on a tremendous winning streak. He beat some of the bigger teams in the league and in the cup, and turned over that incredible the first leg defeat by PSG incredibly in the second leg. So I think it's mostly been down to the results that he's achieved, and I think that the board have taken a look at it and said, actually, now it's virtually impossible not to give him the job, because I think that there would have been uproar with some of the supporters. I think that that you have to try and now plan for next season, look ahead to next season. I think that in some senses it makes sense to give him it now rather than wait until the summer so that he can start to forward plan, because United have got a big rebuilding job to do. Let's not make any mistake about that. They have misled a little bit by finishing second last year. Admittedly, they have a lot of quality in their squad. But I think if you look at some of the extravagant wages they've been paying to players, you look at some of the fees they've been paying to players, you haven't actually improved the side. There's a big job to do. And I think one of the things about Solskjaer is at least he's not going to be massively expensive like a Pochettino might be, and another expensive mistake that the board make. So if it doesn't work out for him, I think at least what United can do is they can steady the ship to a certain degree now, and they can try and revamp their model, whether that be behind closed doors. I think the board needs a bit of work as well. I think, you know, that need probably a technical director or a director director of football to support Solskjaer. And I think that at least they can also try and clear out some of the players on the higher wages, bring in some players who are more suited to, quote, the Man United way, or that more style of that everyone always talks about. But certainly the style of football, which was missing under both Van Gaal and Jose Mourinho.
I want to bring in a friend of mine, a football fan, Hugh Woolsencroft here. I know you've got some views and opinions on this appointment as well. Hugh, how are you doing, sir?
Very well. How are you?
I'm good, mate. I'm good. Cheers for joining us. The question I posed at the top was, is this Solskjaer appointment one led, is it sensible, or is it one led with sentiment? And I want to know from you, do you think Solskjaer is the best man for the job? And if so, what is that job?
It's been led by sentiment, in my opinion. I don't think it's very sensible. Certainly isn't the level of manager that a club the size of Manchester United would need if they're going to get back to the level that they expect to be at and their fans expect them to be at, which is 100% challenging for the Premier League. And in the mix when it comes to the Champions League, I'm not sure how he's going to get them there without buying a number of world-class players. Those world-class players that would look at a manager like him and say, that's the guy that I want to play for. I don't know who they are unless they're British and they want to play for a club like Manchester United. So he's got an issue on his hand. I mean, I just heard about what the job at Manchester United now might entail, whether that's rebuilding behind the scenes, getting players off their wage bill, learning to work with a director of football or a technical director. When's Ole Gunnar Solskjaer done that? Where was the club that he was at where he rebuilt a team or rebuilt a side that was massively underperforming? It's been based on 15 or 16 matches, many of which were not against tough opposition for a squad the calibre of Manchester United. It looks amazing in the context of how bad they were, but in reality, they've got more than enough players in their side to produce the results they've produced. The result against Paris Saint-Germain was handed to them. The win against Tottenham was handed to them by incredibly poor finishing. They won one game against Arsenal at the Emirates, which they always did. They lost one They lost one game at the Emirates, which they probably should have won. I mean, you can base it on results and say he did as much as he possibly could in the caretaker role to get the job. Yeah, and he deserves it if you're going to base it only on 15 or 16 matches. But the size of the job ahead at Manchester United is one that will require experience, is one that will require certainly a level head. He's got the personality, for sure. The players seem to like him. But what happens in the media world, in the world of fans, when Manchester United lose 5 or 6 games? All of a sudden, the question marks will pour in. Was this the right appointment? Was this the right answer for the job? Why were Manchester United, working on sentiment? All of a sudden, the number of question marks over his head will be huge. He doesn't have any Champions League or Premier League titles, FA Cups, any of that, to say, I've done it before. Everyone stay calm. We can turn things around. All we've seen him do is, let's be realistic, win a title with Molde, which is a great achievement in the context of Norwegian football. He had a very difficult time at Cardiff, which I think most managers would have anyway, so fair enough. But where's the credentials other than that? On the day that Jose Mourinho got fired, Did anyone in the world think Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is the man for the job? 18 games later or whatever it is, suddenly he is the man for the job. And if you're going to pick a manager based on 18 matches, I think you're moving on sentiment.
Let me bring in you, Marvin, now. As a United fan, how excited are you about the club under Solskjaer for the next 2 or 3 years? And do you have concerns, as Hugh does, about the fact that as a name, this isn't maybe the guy with the gravitas to handle the rebuilding job that's required at a club the size of Manchester United?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with a lot of things that Hugh said. And I mean, I don't think he'll be there in 3 years, to put it bluntly. He said a lot of things that I agree with. I think, to put it in a nutshell, there's Klopp at Liverpool and there's Pep at City. Is Solskjaer going to be the person to outthink them in the transfer market, tactically at games. Is he the guy? And I'm sorry, he's just not the guy, right? And I think you're right. And I think sentiment is so important in football, particularly when you're in under such a dark cloud that Jose seemed to cast, particularly in his last like year and a half, right? Mm. And I think the big picture for me is when a manager gets fired, the club goes two ways. Either it continues to drop like a stone, like when Ranieri was at Fulham, or you get a bounce, right? And I think what's happened is because the players were under such pressure and such a defensive-minded sort of dinosaur, the bounce was easy to do. I'm Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. I've been there. I've lived this. Like, you are at the best club in the world. Just go out and play, right? And I think go out and play will last you a certain amount of time where the players feel free, but eventually they're going to look to you and say, I need you to tell me what we do against this particular opposition, or how do we do that? And like, I've had lots of arguments with fellow United fans. They go, oh, but he put Lukaku on the right wing at the Emirates. It's the Emirates. That should be bread and butter, right? Even when Van Gaal was there, we were shit, and we still beat Arsenal. Like, that can't be the barometer. I think actually the Spurs victory I think was credible. I think as you said, PSG was lucky. But I do not feel excited. I feel like the board has taken the easy option. I think they were reluctant to... I think the risk of getting rid of Solskjaer, who done so well in the last 18 games, and getting someone else in that might not do it, was too big a risk. It's better to go and say, well, you guys wanted him, and look how well he did. Like, we gave the fans what they wanted. I feel like one of the biggest challenges I have with Solskjaer is... he keeps talking about the olden days and bringing back the good times. And I think we need to get real, right? They're gone. We need new days. We need new good days, not reminiscing about the past. And I feel like, you know, I thought we were terrible on the weekend against Watford. I actually think we're starting to revert to a team looking short of ideas, right? And we're getting by, and we might get by to the end of the season, but I am worried about it. And I think the timing also, we've talked about this before, Joel, but I can only assume the timing is because we're working on some deals, because it almost made no sense to me. You might as well see it out to the end of the season. And I feel like we appointed you a week after one, basically your worst week at the club, where we got packed by you. We drew Barca, no one's fault, but it's difficult.
Yeah.
And then we exited the FA Cup as well.
Well, I wanted to ask you that question, G. Why do you think they announced it right now? Do you think it was because of what Marvin's saying? Or do you feel like that bounce that Marvin referred to is kind of coming to an end, and they thought if we announce the appointment now, that might just be the second bounce to see them through this next 10 or so games?
Joe, before I answer your question, I really wish you'd ask me first, because I feel like, have you ever seen the 8 Mile at Eminem, where the guy was battling the guy and he just said everything bad about him before?
You wanted to shoot him down.
I wanted to shoot him down, but it just said everything.
See, I think Solskjaer would be great at Chelsea.
No.
He would bring the youth through. He would play Hudson-Odoi and Ruben Loftus-Cheek.
Well, to be honest, it can't get worse than sorry. No, but
why do you think now?
It was mind-boggling. I guess for me, what spring to mind is that I think they looked at the situation and maybe thought, well, who are we going to get? And thought, well, if we let it go to the end of the season, we don't get anyone good, then we've kind of messed it up. And I think they've panicked. I think they've been erratic, as the Man United board have kind of been like with transfer. There doesn't seem, people have said for a couple of years now, there doesn't really seem to be a structure or anything to what they're doing. It's just, this seems like a good idea, let's do it now. And that's why I think they've kind of gone with it. But it makes no sense. It's very short term. It's, I guess theoretically it's supposed to be long term, but it strikes as someone of people who don't know what they're doing football wise. And don't, I mean, how do you not know about this bounce? Speaking from a Chelsea perspective, I've seen it so many times. Like, how could you not look around the rest of the leagues and say, okay, you know what, this happens, let's wait to the... What would have been the harm to the end of the season? This whole thing about people sign contracts now, you can sign players. People sign for the club now. People that are not necessarily just signing for the manager. You could have got Rashford to sign a contract on the fact that he's at Manchester United. You don't need... I'm sure Ole Gunnar Solskjaer wasn't the driving force behind them, as they're trying to kind of put out there that it is. So yeah, I think they've just made an irrational decision, not really thought it through, and I think in the long run they might pay for it. But then at the same time, and again, coming for someone who has a mass experience of managers changing, if it doesn't work, you just sack them and you get someone else.
But the thing is, G, you're saying we panicked, and I think that's the bit that's upset me the most, because Solskjaer ain't going anywhere.
That's the thing. He's
not going anywhere. We could have appointed him in the beginning of the season. Anyway, he would stay there. Like Mulder just said, yeah, see you later. So you come back if you want, right? Like, that's the thing that annoys me. Plus, you talk about contract negotiations. He gave Ashley Young a new deal. Like, this is not someone that's going to fall into my good graces straight away.
Sam, you're the one here that's positive about this appointment. But the DOF, the Director of Football, was mentioned earlier on. Do you, having been positive about this appointment, do you trust the board, who have got not a great track record of making decisions, that they've got it right on this? Not only have they got it right here, but do you trust they'll have the infrastructure around Solskjaer to ensure the next 2, 3, 4 years there is a rise back at Manchester United?
Well, first of all, I don't want to say that they've got it right. I mean, that's a little bit far-fetched.
Sam was your one beacon of light, and he's just like steady on there.
Hold on, Jordan, that's a little bit ambitious. I would say that I think there's still potential in this appointment, simply because I think he's got a lot of damage to repair, Solskjaer. I think it seems to be forgotten about how bad things were under Jose Mourinho. We're not talking about a club that is in a good position that just happened to have a slightly dodgy run and the manager left. We're talking about a club that was brought down to their knees by the previous manager. Mm-hmm. He a lot of players were thinking about leaving, and okay, admittedly now he has the likes of Ashley Young have signed a new contract, but we're talking about the chances are that there will be some other players, key players, that will be signing new deals as well. I think that's all part of it. Sorry, I forgot the question now after all that.
I was asking the Director of Football, do you trust that they will have that infrastructure around him? Because the guys are not particularly positive about this appointment going forward. But do you think that if they have to, and if they do have to, they will get that structure around him to say, okay, we don't, you're relatively inexperienced at this level, but we'll make sure that we get the players in that you need to give you the best possible chance
of
succeeding.
Well, I agree with both the guys on this. I don't trust the United board to get any decision right, to be honest. I think the way they are at the moment, particularly with Ed Woodward at the helm, I think we're looking at somebody who is predominantly a very good businessman but hasn't got a clue on the football side. And I think that you can sort of see that in this appointment. If this appointment had been made by the two guys at Man City, you might say, actually, yeah, they know what they're doing, they know what they're talking about. But because it's been made by an Ed Woodward-led board, I'm talking about Solskjaer now, you can't necessarily say that it's the right decision. It looks more sentimental than it does sensible. But I think the fact is, with the Director of Football, again, they've got to get the right man in place. They've got to get the right person in place. And
sorry to cut you here, Sam. Doesn't that make it all the more baffling that surely the Director of Football should be the one that appoints the manager rather than the board appointing him?
I don't think so. I think the board's going to do it. But for me, I almost think that also a point in Solskjaer, if you're a Director of Football, are you sitting here like we are thinking, is this guy going to, like, raise my profile, or is it going to be like pushing water uphill, right? I also think that with Solskjaer, I'm not even convinced by the backroom staff either. Like, I thought Phelan was definitely sentiment. Like, just get someone in who knows the club, knows how to treat a person with respect. Carrick was under Jose. He's just come off the pitch, right? I think it's not just a Director of Football. He needs help in every facet. But, Jude, to be a beacon of light for 1 second, right? I don't want to take away what he's done, right? He has done a fantastic job. And I've said it to G before. Like, I used to... He brought me back. He did bring me back to the days where I used to look forward to watching us for a period of time. Like, I saw watching a Jose team, a Van Gaal team, a Moyes team as a chore that I had to do as a United fan. And you can even see with my trips up to Old Trafford, they sort of went down a lot, because it's almost like, I'm not even comfortable watching this on TV, let alone get on the train. Like Candy Crush, I'm on like level 162, and that is down to it.
Hugh, let me bring you back in. How much player power do you think has also been involved in this appointment? Because, you know, it seems like all the players every minute are tweeting about, you know, the boss, the gaffer, Ole, blah blah blah. Do you feel there has been, this decision has been made largely because the players seem to like him, and when that goes wrong, i.e. the players stop liking him because they might be getting dropped, the results don't go well, can that seriously go wrong?
I think he's such a likeable character that they'll always play for him. I don't think they I don't think they're going to have it. I don't think he's going to have an issue with the players going out and trying to do whatever he's asked them to do. The question mark is going to be over his tactical nous and his managerial experience. You know, it's already been mentioned the likes of Pep Guardiola and Jurgen Klopp. I mean, you know, before Jose got fired, I'll go back to it. If we were saying Klopp versus Ole Gunnar Solskjaer based on what they've done, you know, and it, you know, he made things very simple for the players as soon as he came in. The counter-attacking mode of playing football is great. He recognised that he had a lot of players going forward, a lot of younger players, played with speed. As soon as the injuries hit, he didn't have the team to really play the same way. So whether he goes out in the transfer market and tries to really bulk the squad with players that suit a style ahead of being a manager that constantly changes his tactics, it'll be interesting to see. But when it comes to the player power being involved in it, I mean, I think actually it comes down to fan power. I think the reality of the situation is so many people were not only happy to see Jose go, not only happy to see Ole Gunnar Solskjaer come in, but also ecstatic to see the results improve. The mood was just so good inside of Old Trafford for the first time in a very long time that everyone, not just the players, were clinging on to it. And I imagine Ed Wood was one of those who thought, this is good for business. It's going well on the pitch for the first time under his tenureship, so why not stick with it? And how long it lasts? Well, long may it continue in terms of Manchester United fans. Whether they'll challenge for a Premier League title in the next three seasons, I mean, I'd find it to be highly unlikely unless Woodward goes and spends serious money, because I don't see them the style that Klopp's got at Liverpool, and he's had some injuries to deal with, but the style seems to be overawing most of the league, and we know what Manchester City do already. It's overawing most of Europe. So will Manchester United get a style that gets to that level? I'd be amazed.
Sam, we've mentioned there about the structure around Solskjaer. I think United still need two or three at least kind of key players in that 11 to be competitive next year. I was thinking today about recruitment, and I don't know who's buying the players at United. And
it's been dreadful.
Well, a question to all of you, but I'll start with you, Sam. Who was the last Manchester United signing that you would deem a success? I've got a name in my head. I want to see if you guys agree with it. Who was the last Man United signing you can think of who you would say was a success?
It depends how you measure success, doesn't it?
Your definition of success.
None of us win in Premier League, that's for sure.
Ibrahimovic, probably.
Okay. Yeah.
Martial, I would say, has been a success.
I wouldn't say he's been a success so
I would
far.
Say Pogba.
Pogba was the one I was thinking
might
of.
Is he a success? It's difficult to say, isn't it?
Can anybody else think of anyone, the last signing? Sorry, go on, who go first?
No, well, I was just going to say, you know, in terms of a success as a Manchester United player or a success as a signing, they're two different things, because in the context of being a great signing for Manchester United, the last player is David De Gea. In terms of hitting the heights that other Manchester United players have hit, he's got to a level where you would say this is exactly what you would expect from a Manchester United player, that level. The others have been relatively good signings in terms of either their cost or the fact that they've played quite well, but none of them have hit the heights that you would expect a Manchester United player to hit, in my opinion.
Yeah, that's a fair point, that, actually. Mm. Yeah, they probably say that De Gea has performed as you would expect a player playing for a team that is supposedly regarded as one of the world's elite. Mm. And if you think about how United have been in recent seasons, you're looking at, you know, fifth, fourth, sixth place finishes. That's hardly conducive to a world elite, is it?
And what do you see changing this summer? Because you're going to need players. And again, go back to the question I kind of asked earlier on. Do you trust that the board have someone in place that can identify a talent? But secondly, when United are in a battle for a top European player with Real Madrid, Liverpool, Bayern Munich, do you trust that the person doing those deals at United will get the deal done? And win those battles. When next Leroy Sané comes up and all of Europe's are in for him, do you trust that United Do you know what I mean? Have the guy that will get that deal done.
I think it's really difficult because I think that what United have tended to do in recent seasons is say, well, we'll just pay more money than everybody else to get the player in. Mm. It's not about the draw of the club. I don't agree with the other with these guys that Solskjaer isn't a draw for players. I'm not saying that he is a particular draw for players, but I don't think it's about that. I think Man United is a big enough name where players are still inclined that they'll want to sign for the club.
But when you're up against Real Madrid, who are a club and have a name manager, City are a big club now and have a name manager. Do you see what I think? What the guys are saying there is, one, it's not enough to just be a big name draw. A lot of the top clubs now have big managers as well.
Yeah, I totally agree, and I think that if you're looking at the likes of City and Liverpool and probably Real Madrid because of their, you know, their history, you probably argue that they would be in pole position to sign players. But I still think that, you know, you know that if you go to Man United as a young player, you're going to have a more chance to feature in the first team than a lot of the teams across Europe. I mean, Leroy Sané is probably one of the world's
young players going to take Manchester United where they need to be. You know, young players aren't going to make them better than they are now.
What do you mean?
You're saying we don't need experienced players rather than young players?
Well, yeah, I think if Manchester United are going to get back challenging against the likes of Liverpool and Manchester City, they need to add proven quality. It would be great to say that they can attract loads of great names and maybe players that we say they've got great potential going forward. But if they don't immediately deliver, that's another 2 or 3 years of development, transition, whatever you want to call it. What will be the measure of success for United over the next 2 or 3 years? Because if they incrementally improve but don't win anything, that for a team like them, that's a failure.
Well, see, the thing is, I've got mixed views about this, right? Because City, a big club, steady on.
Well, yeah, I did say it was like
steady on, steady on. But what I will say is, in terms of, to Hugh's point and to Sam's point, there are some people out there that I think would improve the club that probably the Reals and the Barcas aren't in there. I think the easy one that's been mentioned a couple of times is Sancho, right? And I think he's someone that probably wants to come back to the Prem, and I think he's someone that would probably still be in love with the theatre of dreams, so to speak. And to your point about bringing in 3 or 4 players, I think there's a hole on the if we're going to play 4-3-3 and you're going to go Martial and Rashford, I think that right hand side is open, and that's where Sancho plays, right? So I think there are some things they can do. I guarantee whatever if we did buy Sancho, we'll pay 30-40% more than we should do because of the state of the club and the fact that the board don't really know what they're doing. Agents know that. It's pretty straightforward. But what I will say to agree with Sam, like, it has to be a balance, right? Like, we've tried to buy players. Like, Fred cost us £57 million. Like, let's not forget that sum, right? That is not insignificant. And I would have rather have taken a punt on someone a bit younger, a bit cheaper. So I think if we are going to spend the cash, they've either got to be a very hot prospect or they've got to be somebody who is going to bring that experience. Otherwise, I'm happy with youth, right? I've now fully come to the conclusion with Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's appointment that my kids might be in secondary school by the time I see another Premier League title, right? So if that's the case, let's start from the ground up. Let's reinvest in grassroots. There's a lot of names. Greenwood's been mentioned. Chong's been mentioned. There's a lot of names in there. If you know, like Rashford only came through because we had injuries. Solskjaer knows the reserves. He knows how it works. So let's blood some of that in and balance it out with some marquee signings, right? But I'm okay with youth. Like I've said, United in this current form shouldn't be signing a player over 26, right? It's really simple. We've got experience. Like you just signed Ashley Young to a new deal, right? You've got miles on the clock. And, you know, as much as I joke about Ashley Young, he's won stuff with us, right? So I think it's time to, we've got to think a bit younger and a bit strategically. And I think that's not, to your point, George, that is not just Solskjaer's role, right? The director of football, if I'm Woodward or whoever's doing the interviewing, like that's part of my question. Like,
the next 10 years.
Yeah, like, tell me how you'd go about this. Where would you put your scouting resource? How would you do it? What sort of position do you think we need to improve? It's those questions that should be being asked in order to foster. And Solskjaer should be, I think it's part the other way around. You're saying the board, the director of football should have picked Solskjaer. I think Solskjaer's got to be part of this director of football appointment as well, right? He's got to work out, can I work with this person?
Well, not really, because that's to your very first point. You said that you don't envisage Solskjaer being there more than 3 years. So the director of football job is to think of the next 10 years.
Everything I say about Solskjaer, I am hoping I'm wrong. Everything I say about United not doing it, I am hoping I'm wrong. I am hoping for the best things for that club. I love it with my heart and soul.
But either way, as I see it, the director of football's job is to say, this for the next decade is the kind of football I want United to play, the profile of players we're going to sign. Doesn't matter who the manager is, we stick to this as the plan.
Yeah,
Solskjaer won't be there in 10 years.
But conversely, I'm not sure that the director of football is going to be there 10 years. Like, football's just a game changer, but right? So if the transfers don't go well in the next 3 years as the Solskjaer's not doing the performance, I think as quick as Solskjaer's out the door, that DOF's out the door as well, right?
Can I just make a point to what Marvin said there? Because I think it's important. I think one thing United do have to do is they have to get off this idea that they can just say that they can bring a manager in who peddles this whole rhetoric about winning trophies. We've got to start winning trophies. United have got a long way to do to make up the gap, as been pointed out by the guys here. They are well off the pace in the Premier League, and I think there's the board, and if the new director of football comes in or whoever, and the manager to a certain degree, have to be singing from the same hymn sheet and say, actually, it's all about progress. We're going to start buying younger players. We're going to be looking at investing in a team for the next 5 years who can be successful. Now, United obviously haven't got 5 years to be successful in terms of how the fans and the supporters and everyone else views the club. But in terms of, I don't think they can just start saying, well, it's time we started challenging for trophies again. There's a lot more behind that has to go on before they can start to compete again.
I agree with you, man, but not in today's day and age. If we hire someone and they do not say they want to win stuff, everyone's going to be on them. And like Jose said it, Van Gaal said it, like, you need to give us something to look forward to, right? And I guess part of it is self-belief. If I'm a Pogba in that dressing room and all I'm hearing is progress and we go from fourth this year to second next year, is that progress? And I think trophies you've got to be careful with, right? Because, yeah, we're way off Prem. But we went out of the FA Cup to Wolves, right? Like, we should have got an FA Cup final. Against City, anything could happen. So I know FA Cup is the version of the league for Arsenal, Jude, but it would have been nice to see a final at Wembley. Do you know what I mean?
Hugh, make your final point, Hugh. Sorry, go on.
Well, I was going to say that the work that the director of football, if they come in at Manchester United, needs to do really needs to go with a focus on the academy. Now, I think there will, going forward, be questions over Nicky Butt, who, of course, plenty of Man United fans see as a legend, but I think whoever that director of football is, when they come in, I think they really actually need to get a stranglehold over the academy. Living in Manchester, speaking to people and seeing players, often going down to City's incredible, if you've never been there, training facility. Manchester United need to be sure that they can attract youngsters. And I'm talking 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. I mean, that's the groundwork. People talk about Rashford, they're talking about Mason Greenwood and stuff like that. Now, if Manchester United aren't competing, we talk about La Masia, Bayern Munich, the players they produce. The reality situation is Manchester United have always been a club that supplemented the groundwork of players from Manchester who came through the academy with some starlets on top. In terms of their transfers, short term going forward, they can only buy one of two players because top players in their prime are not going to move to Manchester United. I cannot see a top player in their prime moving to Manchester United. So they either get young talent like Jadon Sancho has been mentioned already with potential going forward, or they get players who are good, top, maybe even very, very good, coming down the other side of it, the likes of Modric, Bale, who can possibly come in, do a job 2 to 3 years.
Short term, yeah.
Short term, and improve the mentality, experience, but also say, we do have some top players here who've won things to those players that they want to sign in the years afterwards. Top players in their prime are not going to go to Man United, which means that they're not, unless they offer, I mean, we're talking $450 a week. Like, I can't see why you would go and play for Man United over somebody. I'm being realistic. I hear size, but the reality situation is,
I'm loving it, man. Don't worry.
No, Gabriel's agreeing with you. He's loving it.
I'm enjoying it, man.
Listen, Hugh.
So, So the director of football has that job because everyone talks about the mentality and winning games, and we talked about Solskjaer saying this has to be a winning club. If you can't even, if you're not in the conversation for the best players in the world, you can't say you're one of the biggest clubs in the world, and that's it.
I hear you. Mm. Hugh, cheers for coming on, man. Big up.
Shout out to Hugh.
Cheers, man. just a couple of quick ones, very briefly. I want to ask Gabriel and Sam. First of all, Gabriel, Alexis Sanchez, does he kind of have United, have them up a little bit in the sense of the contract he's on is so big, mm-hmm. is that going to make the likes of De Gea, who I'm hearing, and Paul Pogba think, well, if you're paying Sanchez that, if I'm going to stick around for the next 2 or 3 years, I'm one of the top three players in this club, I need that as well. And any player coming in is going to be saying, I want something near what Sanchez is getting.
Well,
and how do they get him off the books?
But here's the thing, if you have a smart board, they take the argument that Sanchez was kind of like a pseudo free transfer and a one-off. But that's, can Ed Woodward and those guys deliver that? That's the question. But you're right. I think it does make it extremely difficult. I think they should probably just cut their losses. I mean, at least he's not there. Even if you had to pay $100,000 of his wages to go somewhere else, because I think that's because no one else is going to pay him what he's on now. Yeah, just get him off the books so that there isn't that benchmark to go up against. But yeah, if it was me, I would try to say, you know, that's a one-off. That was a free transfer that we paid a little bit of money. Forget about that. This is what our standard is.
And just finally, Sam, how important is knowing the club? Because I keep hearing in the last few weeks this, you know, Solskjaer knows the club. And I hear, of course, other football clubs as well. It's important to have people that know the club and get the club. And I'm wondering how important that is. And I don't use Port United, you know them better than me. Is the fact that Solskjaer knows the club, how important in the grand scheme of that is that in being the manager at Manchester United, or am I kind of slightly underplaying that?
I don't think it's as important as has been made out that it is. I think there's a lot of talk that knowing the club is very important, but I think actually anyone with half a brain cell knows the club. I think the problem is that a lot of the managers that have been appointed previously have been managers that have been trying to do things far too much in their own way.
They've gone too far the other way.
Now, obviously, you're going to have a certain sense of their own single-mindedness about how they manage and how they get results. But I do feel like, I mean, the appointment of a Jose Mourinho was only ever going to lead to his way of thinking. It was never going to lead to him sort of changing his philosophy and looking back over the history books for the last 30 years to see how United have played. So I think that it doesn't necessarily need to be somebody like a Solskjaer who's got 11 years of playing at the club plus 2 or 3 years of coaching and has followed the results ever since that time, that knows the club inside out. Mm-hmm. But it does need to be someone who appreciates the United's value in the world stage, in the Premier League, and what they've done over the last 25, 30, 40, 50 years even. Because there is a certain expectancy at United in terms of ways of playing and ways of dealing with the club, and how the club, not only how the club looks on the field, but how the club looks off the field in terms of perception by the media and that sort of thing as well. And I think it wouldn't take, I mean, for example, I don't think that Mauricio Pochettino would necessarily have been a bad choice, who could have filled that void, somebody who plays the right style of football, if you will, and somebody who kind of is selfless enough to not put himself first all the time. And I think that's been the previous problem with the previous managers.
I hear you. Right, let's move on now, guys. We've done a large chunk there of Solskjaer United. I want to move on. Let's talk about Cardiff briefly. So I want to bring in Cardiff City correspondent from The Wells Online, Dominic Booth. Dominic, how are you doing, sir?
Good with you.
You all right, mate?
Yeah, very good, thank you. Very good.
Good. I'm very well, man. Very well. Chip's coming on. I know you must have heard most of that. I know you are a United fan. So just super briefly, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, good appointment?
Yeah, it has to be, doesn't it? I mean, it's strange saying that from my position as Cardiff City correspondent, because Cardiff fans don't have fond memories of Solskjaer at all. And when he was first given the job, there's absolute bafflement from fans in South Wales. Obviously, it's a completely different job, completely different kettle of fish. Like you were saying just then, I think that the fact that Solskjaer knows the club is vital, and that reconnect with the fans is the huge thing. We wouldn't have got that with anyone else. I don't even think that necessarily Pochettino would have come in and done any better than Solskjaer, and may not do even if he came in the summer. So I think it's a no-brainer.
Okay, on to Cardiff now. Cardiff don't want to pay the £15 million to Nantes, as they claim the deal wasn't legally binding. This doesn't seem to me like it's a very good look for Cardiff City. What do you think Cardiff are trying to achieve by not paying this? Because PR-wise, it looks really, really bad. And they may argue we're saving ourselves £15 million, but for the kind of... The PR that the club are getting because of this is potentially more damaging than the £15 million that they, I believe, are legally due to pay.
Yeah, it's an ugly one, isn't it? It doesn't reflect well on many people, really. You mentioned PR. Cardiff have actually employed outsourced a PR firm, a sort of really slick London-based firm who operate, really high-stakes public affairs cases, basically. So that's how seriously they think it can affect their image PR-wise. Obviously, they believe, the foundation of it is that they believe that the not all the paperwork was completed. I remember having a conversation with someone in the Cardiff City hierarchy days after the disaster, and we privately asked the question then, what's going to happen to this £15 million? And that person told me, we have the paperwork here. It's always subject to international clearance, these moves, and we don't believe that it was completed. Obviously, it would have been helpful for everyone if this had been played out behind closed doors and not sort of trading blows in the media. But Cardiff believe they have a case, and as horrible as it all is, it's just going to keep going on, I think.
It sounds weird, because I think Cardiff actually conducted themselves really well when the tragedy actually first happened. I thought they kind of garnered a lot of positive PR from the way that they handled it and the fans. This just seems to be a little bit crass, but we'll see how that develops. Just finally, Dominic, Cardiff, they, in my opinion, overachieved in getting promoted to the Premier League last season. Do you think that they are equipped, should they go down this season, to come back up? Or do you think that what they did last year was, they were so extraordinary, more work and more investment might be needed for them to have another push to come back up?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. You look down the road at Swansea, and they've obviously gone down and accepted that, not even really tried financially to come back up, just taking the parachute payments, and they'll reset in a few years probably. That's not gone down well with the fans down there. I think Cardiff are going to see a lot of change in the summer if they go down. I think Mia Warnock will probably walk away. I think they got a lot of players on loan, some of the best players really on loan, like Camarasa, Arta, Nias, they'll all leave because they're all contracted just for the season. And then they've got some talented young players like Josh Murphy and Bobby Reid who might be taken away. So I really can't say. It's impossible to know. I don't know what everyone else thinks on that one. I mean, the question is, for me, still, whether they can stay up, because I think they're still in the really good chance.
In a word, guys, does anyone think they can stay up?
No.
Absolutely not.
Yes.
Oh, Sam's going for it. Dom, cheers for your time, mate. Thanks for coming on, mate.
Cheers, Jordan.
Cheers, thanks, pal. Thank you very much. Let's have a quick roundup of this week's fantasy football updates. We have a new leader. Tom Wine is up the top now with 55 game week points. Tarvis Clonging, if I pronounced his name correctly, he's now second with a game week of 70 points so far. This is obviously a double game week, so there's still more points to accumulate. I have dropped down to 18th with a game week points of 44, and I played my triple captain. Marvin, you've moved up to 33rd with a game week of also 44 points so far as
Listen,
well.
Listen, I've got a lot of players to do the double game week. Lindelof's wife had a baby, so he's flipping the play. Cathcart got rested. I'm still very optimistic that I can make top 10.
Wow. And Gabriel.
Still got chips to play as well, George.
How many you got left?
All of them except free hit.
Okay.
Still got a wild card.
All right, okay, you might want to use it soon. Soon.
What's the point difference between me and you? 100?
I don't know, but the place difference is...
Forget about
20
places.
Points.
Like, that could be, I've got Aubameyang. He likes to score cute goals against lower opposition. So I'm more than comfortable.
We'll see how it plays out. And Gabriel, you're 45th.
Oh, wow.
You're laughing at me. You're giving it the big one. You're there languishing.
Listen, you know me. If there's a joke, I'll take it. Think about it later.
So basically, up your game.
I'm focused on the Europa League. So we're the equivalent of the Europa League in this. That's what I'm focused on.
Sam, do you play?
Not very well, no. Oh. I have got a team, but I'm not very well. I think I'm doing very, very badly this season.
How many leagues are you in?
Only one. No, two.
And where are you in those leagues? Don't hold back.
Oh, I'm like 104th in one, I think, and about 7th in another, but that's only because there's about 11 teams in it.
Okay, so you're not doing too well. Let's have a brief chat, guys, about Scottish football. don't laugh.
Listen, I know you're going to talk about the derby, and I loved it, so let's have it.
What did you think? Fantasy football to Scottish football. Which one's which?
Wow. What did you think of it?
Loved it.
Why? Well, I know why you loved it, but tell everyone why you loved it.
Well, I'm
a thug.
I lack a bit of passion, right?
Is that code for?
This is not me talking about my bedroom performance. This is on the pitch, right? Like, I think actually, and I've said it to people before, right? But it does grind my gears sometimes when people are in the tunnel. Do you remember that bar we went to on International
Duty? A little hug and kiss.
Can't wait to swap shirts. Like, I told you, like, back in the day when I used to have to give big presentations and I needed to G myself up, I used to play the Roy Keane Vieira skirmish in that tight Highbury tunnel when Keno basically said he's going to kill him, basically. I love all of it. And The only blemish is the red card really hurt Rangers, right? Because that there's passion and there's stupidity. Mm-hmm. That was stupid. And Brown was instrumental in everything that lit the touch paper in that game, right? And I think he, obviously the blue-eyed boy of Celtic, blah, 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 but he knows how these derbies work. And he knows win at all costs, right? It wouldn't surprise me if they said, he's the sort of person we can get sent off. And Brown was going to nibble him until something happened. I thought after the game it was brilliant. And it was still kicking off when Sky decided to move it.
And quickly they were telling
me what channel. I'm looking for the remote control. I want to see how this played out. One certain guy's shirt was totally ripped. Like, these players know the stakes. And actually, Scottish football's been crying out for Rangers to come back. I haven't watched a game in Scotland. I used to always watch the Old Firm derby. Like, you're guaranteed a game there, right? Mm. It is a poor man's El Clasico, for want of a better word. Like, at that time, there's only two clubs in that league. That's the game where stuff goes down, right? And I think Scottish football needed to get Rangers back as quickly as possible. I hate Steven Gerrard. I hate Liverpool. So I was glad Rangers lost. And actually, out of the two, I'm more of a Rangers fan than a Celtic fan. I used to love Rod Wallace back in the days. Don't ask me why, right? No, but I enjoyed it. I think it was a good advert for the put it this way, right? It's not a good advert because I'm talking about the argy bargy, but today in the office is the first time someone asked me if I watched the Old Firm derby in forever, right? Nobody speaks about Scottish football, right? And I think let it play. I think even the way Lennon was giving it as well. Gerrard is trying to give up this cool customer, like, yeah, wears a suit, like, he's all about it.
You're not
it.
Buying it, are you?
I don't even think he should have got the job, personally. I think him getting the job is a big advert to where people just make appointments on sentiment, right? Like, he hasn't got anything to say that he's going to do it.
Let me bring in Celtic fan now, Brian from the Celtic Underground. Brian, how you doing, mate?
I'm great, thanks. How are you guys?
We're very good, mate. We're very well. We're just talking there about the Old Firm yesterday. Tell us, what is it like up there when you've won the Old Firm?
Well, for a start, I have to make it clear, if you're a Celtic fan, the Old Firm died in 2012 when Rangers died. So it's a Glasgow derby to us. But it's pretty good when you win because, well, half the city's are Rangers supporters and half are Celtic, and it's pretty good.
there's only interest, Marvin kind of alluded to it just then, there's only interest in Scottish football, it seems to be, when there's an Old Firm game on. And even then, I think it's only because Rodgers was there and Gerrard are up there. The national team hit an all-time low, losing last week to Azerbaijan. Is the lack of money the reason as to why Scottish football has been so poor for so long, or are there other reasons why, you know, that Scottish football has been in the doldrums for the best part of a decade now?
Well, actually, Scottish football's problem started in the late 1980s when David Murray arrived at Rangers and committed financial vandalism on the game. Because what he did was he came along with a speculate to accumulate strategy, which was encouraged by the press in Scotland, that was the way we had to go. And clubs spent more money than they had in trying to match what Rangers were doing. And eventually Rangers went bust doing that because they spent taxpayers' money that they didn't have. That's how desperate they got. But the problem then came, all the other clubs have been following suit. And where in England, what happened, if you analyse what happened to the game in England due to the terrible tragedies at Heysel and Hillsborough, English clubs were not in Europe. The Taylor report came in and they spent money on the infrastructure, the stadiums. And then the Sky money came along and English clubs started spending money on the teams. But the foundations were in place. What happened in Scotland was, pre that time, all our clubs then started lavishing vast amounts of money onto the pitch before the infrastructure was in place. And then when the requirements came along to have all-seated stadium, the problem was they were chasing two goals of trying to build the stadiums and trying to put the money on the park, and they were creating unsustainable debt. And whereas in England then, the Sky God came along and presented all of this cash, in Scotland it didn't. And you've got to remember, Scotland actually, on a per capita basis, has the most watched football product in the world. On a per capita basis, more people in Scotland turn up on a match day and attend a football game than any other country. Actually, I think it's not in the world. I think in Cyprus, on a per capita basis, it marginally sometimes pips Scotland. So on what we've got per for population, we have a fantastic product that people turn up in. The problem we've got is the vast amounts of money in England then makes the disparity with Scotland even greater.
It dwarfs it. So what's the answer? Do you see Scottish football rising up anytime soon? Are you producing, you know, new coaches? Because we all know as fans that what we support English teams down here the last 2 decades has been, you know, a number of good to very, very good Scottish managers and coaches. Are you producing good coaches anymore? Are you producing talented young players anymore? What's going to kickstart a rejuvenation in Scottish football?
There's a number of challenges. I think one of the challenges is a lack of leadership from the top of the SFA, which again is a bit of a catch-22 because we don't qualify for haven't qualified for tournaments for 20 years. Because of that, the SFA have less money to invest in the game. Because we invest less money in the game, we're not qualifying for tournaments, and so that becomes a problem. You also have one of the reasons that English football has been transformed is not just the Sky money. Howard Wilkinson in 1992 was the last English person to win the top flight league in England. So actually, England itself has a coaching crisis.
Mm-hmm.
But you just it's hidden because you've got this massive array of top foreign and elite coaches who come into the game, and so the coaching experience that's happening in England is excellent, but it's masking the fact that you don't. I mean, Eddie Howe is probably one of the best Englishmen coaching in the English top flight.
Mm.
He's got zero chance of getting one of the top six jobs. So, one of the problems is we are not getting those European coaches who bring different ideas and different mentalities in, which might change the idea on the park and change the players coming through. Obviously, I'm a Celtic fan. We actually do quite well. There's 75 players in Scottish football who came through the Celtic, who played professional football in Scotland, who came through the Celtic Academy system. Our game on Saturday, we had a number of Academy players on the park. Andy Robertson at Liverpool was a Celtic Academy player. You know, we do not bad in producing Academy players, but the problem is we're the only ones.
Just finally, Brian, strict liability. Tell us a little bit about this and how it's working out up in Scotland.
Well, there's a lot of debate in Scotland. We had what's called the Offensive Behaviour at Football Act, which was a misconceived idea by the Scottish Government to deal. It was the concept that all problems in society are all football's fault. And if you could just stop football fans misbehaving, everything in the world would be perfect. You know, Brexit would be resolved. You know, that sort of nonsense mentality. That was eventually voted down. And so the thing they're looking to revisit to deal with supporters on the park and a flare. So if one guy chucks a flare, they're wanting to bring in the concept of stands would be shut down or even more severe that the points would be deducted from teams to deal with this massive problem of, well, there were 60,000 people at Celtic Park yesterday. Six people were arrested. at the Transmit, which is the music festival which replaced Union Park in Scotland. There'll be about 80,000 people there on one day, and there'll probably be about 30 arrests. Okay. Nobody's looking to ban concerts.
No.
People want to deal with football fans and blame football fans for stuff.
No, I hear that.
So that's a big thing that's being pushed forward.
Brian, that's great. Cheers for your time, pal. Thank you very much for coming on.
Cheers.
Cheers, mate. All right, guys, let's now finish with our FFP Team of the Year. I'm quite looking forward to this because...
It's a bit early, isn't it?
Is it though?
I think there's football to be played.
I think we've seen enough from players. Huh?
The players vote around now.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, Marvin.
Yeah, player of the year is going to be voted for, isn't it?
Yeah, anyway.
I don't know why that is, by the way. I don't know why they don't leave it until the end of the season.
It's like Solskjaer all over again, isn't it?
Going too early.
Good point.
Right, so initially I thought to keep it simple and easy to go 4-4-2, but someone on the panel here thought that 4-3-3 was the best way to go, so I kind of put it out to the other two panelists here and I didn't get any objections, so we're going to move to 4-3-3.
We won't mention who that person was per se, but maybe 4-4-2 is extremely old school and archaic and very few people few people play it anymore, so maybe the host should take a look at himself before he throws stones living in that lovely glass house.
So someone would have came with Aguero.
I mean, to be honest, if Solskjaer bought 4-4-2 back and it worked, I'd be happy.
Exactly,
I love the 4-4-2.
Exactly.
So I still play it on champ, but that's different.
Right.
You probably will try and bring it back.
So 4-3-3, and we're going to agree on as a foursome on each player in each position. Right, so let's go through this now. Let's start with the goalkeepers. I've got a list of candidates for each position, but I'll start with you guys, who you guys feel should be the goalkeeper in this year's, in our FFP Team of the Year. Gabriel, you start off.
Yeah.
And let's keep this relative.
You're ready to look to the sky.
You know what? I want to be controversial and go Rui Patricio.
Okay, at
Wolves. I just think he's been a bedrock of what they've achieved. I'm not convinced by Alisson. I think he's made so many mistakes, which has been covered up by how good Liverpool have been at certain points. So I'm gonna go with Patricio. It was between Patricio and Alisson, but I'm gonna go with Patricio.
The start of the season, we did a thing called One to Watch this season, and my one to watch was Alisson, because I didn't know much about him and I heard a lot of hype about him. And I don't think he's made a lot of mistakes. I think he's done a lot of bad things which he's got out of trouble for. So he's often made a really poor kick, but it hasn't been punished.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
so
exactly.
I'm with you on the Alisson one. All right.
Well, technically you said Patricio, you said I'm with you on the Alisson one.
In terms of his analysis of the season this year so far.
I fear a lot of this team's going to be full of a lot of City and Liverpool players because of how well they've done this season, sadly.
I was thinking of putting a ruling, we only have three players from the top six clubs, but then
I am inclined to agree with Rui Patricio, though. I think he's been excellent this season, apart from the fact that he wears number 11, which is absolute no-no for a goalkeeper. But he's been excellent, and it would be between him and Edison for me. I think that Edison's been terrific. He obviously creates as well as he saves as well. He's great with his feet. I think he's better than Alisson, even though Alisson has his international place for some reason.
It's weird, isn't it?
Yeah. Very strange. But I think I'd be more than happy for Patricio to be the goalkeeper for this team.
Marvin?
I went Edison. Okay. It's funny because when I was thinking about it, I was going Alisson as well. But watching him yesterday,
Didn't have a good game, did he?
It's not just that he didn't have a good game, but I've seen him do that before. I just feel like not only is Edison a less erratic goalkeeper, for a better word, but, and I know you got a lot of stick for it, but his distribution is out of this world, and he's continued to do it time and time again. And it's weird because I know we'll come onto the defence, but I feel like Liverpool shoring up their defence has helped Alisson and protected him a bit more, whereas City haven't really changed their defence from last season, but Edison's still putting in the top draw performance. I think there's like two or three goals between them in terms of defence as well.
So Alisson has the highest save percentage this season. My shout, no one's mentioned the guy that I was going to throw in, but it's redundant now. I was going to go Foster at Watford.
Yeah.
He's had a really good year this year, slightly. No one's mentioned him. So, all right, so we've got two versus one. So we're going with Patricio then.
Yeah, do you not get a vote?
Well, mine was Forster. Mine was Forster. Yeah. So. Yeah,
but over the ones that we've discussed, would you have a preference, Edison or Patricio?
It doesn't matter now because it's 2-1, so, you know.
Yeah, but you could make it 2, Jordan. 2-2 means it, you could put it to a fancy vote on Instagram. No, forget it. You clearly don't want to back me here. I don't want you backing.
Edison or... I'll go Patricio. Yeah, I'll go Patricio. I think that's a fair shot. Bang. All right, he's our goalkeeper. Okay, let's go back four. Marvin, let's start left backs.
I went Robertson for left back. Mm-hmm. And I hate Liverpool, right? But I think overall he's been really, really stellar. I think if you look at the other clubs, there's been a bit of chopping and changing. But not only has he been relatively sound left back, but going forward, I think... Both Liverpool's fullbacks, I think they are almost the epicentre of their success, the way they get forward, put the balls in the box. And actually, I'd say Robertson's one of the best crossers I've seen in the league this year. I think other people have really struggled to like beat the first man. And I think if you have a better defender, and a better striker, and everyone loves Firmino, but you get a better striker in there who's good in the air, you'd see even more assists for Robertson. I think he's had an outstanding season, and I'm a big fan.
I think that's a fair shout. I was going to throw in Hollybass. I think plays left back a lot. I think another Watford player's had a good season. But has anybody got anyone apart from Robertson?
No, it's got to be Robertson for me.
Robertson's in then, fair enough. Let's go right back. Sam, start with you.
Unfortunately, I'm going to go down the Liverpool route again and say Trent Alexander-Arnold. I think he's been brilliant this season. I think he's had a terrific year. I think he's probably the future for England as well. I think he's... another one who's excellent from wide positions, puts in a great ball, he can also defend, takes a mean free kick, so I think I'd go with Trent.
I think he's probably the one person who has got a better delivery than Robertson in front of me.
But I didn't pick him, actually.
I didn't pick him either.
Who was your one? Who's your pick?
Wan-Bissaka.
Yeah, same for me.
Yeah, I think he's been in really good form in a team that has been kind of up and down, and therefore he's been the one constant for me. So I'm going for him.
Yeah, and it's weird because obviously I've got both of my fantasy team, funny enough, because they're cheapest chips, right? But I think Trent Alexander-Arnold's done fantastic. Mm. And actually, I know, have you seen the viral thing when he hits the bar, when Lingard's giving him some stick and they go, hit the bar, and he just hits the bar first time, right? Okay. Like, he is a very talented, and I think he will be the new Gary Neville for England. Like, he'll be the staple there for years to come. I think he's that good. But I think the reason why I picked Wan-Bissaka is everything G just said in terms of that Liverpool back unit is pretty stellar. Mm. I think not only has that Palace back unit chopped and changed, not even just defence, but the keeper's changed a bit as well. And he's continued to deliver at a very high level. And I think, you know, I heard one of your pods a few weeks ago when there was a Palace fan on there talking about the fact that he's not the best defender yet. He'll grow, but his pace and he talked about his magic legs. Like, he'll get a touch out, he'll get it. Mm. I think he's been a revelation for Palace. I'll be very surprised if they hang on to him for the next couple of years. And I think what I also liked is I knew about Alexander-Arnold in the summer. I saw him coming. Do you know what I mean? Like, you knew, but Wan-Bissaka for me.
Nowhere.
And he's been top drawer, so I can't speak highly enough about him.
So. I was going to go with Trent as well, Alexander-Arnold.
Your vote doesn't count, so...
but my young player of the year, Shah, was going to be Wan-Bissaka, so I feel like I'm kind of conflicted there. It's a tough one.
Wan-Bissaka is a good shout. I mean, I think we'd like to see a bit more from him in an attacking sense. I think defensively
outstanding. But I kind of don't. I'm one of these people that...
He's a classic fullback in that sense that he can actually
defend.
Yeah,
I'm one of these people. I don't really mind if you don't contribute going forward.
But don't forget,
as long as you're doing your job.
We're talking about Palace forwards here.
True, yeah. They are all.
You know what I mean?
Benteke.
Yeah.
What's the guy that's always injured?
Wickham.
Oh, man. It's tough, Sledin.
It's a tough one.
So, Jordan, have you gone from like not having a vote to now being the last vote?
I've got the crucial vote. I'm going to go with Alexander-Arnold just. I've been really impressed. I think he's been, Van Dijk aside, Liverpool's most important player, even more than Mane. I think he's been really, really strong. Wow. So we've got 2-2. So how do we settle this?
Coin toss? Has anyone got a coin?
Has anyone got a coin in them? This is not very good podcasting, but I mean...
I'd be happy either way with whoever goes in, to be fair. I think that's fair.
You need to call.
Someone's going.
You've not done this before, have you? Can you imagine
him at the Super Bowl.
And Antonio called it heads or tails.
Heads for who? Oh my gosh. All right, heads for Trent Alexander-Arnold, tails for Wan-Bissaka.
It's going down the hole.
This is the worst coin toss ever.
It was heads. So Alexander Arnold right back. All right, two centre backs. Let's go G. Who's your first centre back choice?
I think it's an easy one with Van Dijk, really. I can't see any argument. I've been fighting this Van Dijk thing because, like, I remember a few years back saying this, he's just big and physical. Like, I didn't think the actual brain was there. But man, that 2-on-1 situation.
But G, don't quote that as the bottom line for it, because we've talked about that at length, and you know that if you're any defender, like if Smalling doesn't do that, I'm annoyed. It's Sissoko.
Smalling could not do
it's,
that.
G, it's Sissoko, and he was just he. Do and don't go on like he made this critical challenge. He just let Sissoko take a shot.
But isn't the point that someone like Smalling would have committed?
No.
Whereas he hedged and he thought about what he was doing.
What I'm saying to you, right? I get it. Right? He's in my team. But we've talked about this a lot between us, right? He is... The media love him. Love. It's the love is getting ridiculous.
All right, so back to one side. Is he the best centre-back in the country at the moment?
Yes.
So justified then.
No, it's not. Because you guys are putting him on a platform where you've already said he should get Player of the Year.
He's my
questionable.
Yeah.
And I think... Who was it? Who was Holland playing the other day?
Germany. He had a very bad game.
He had a very bad game. But you didn't say that. You did not say that. Yeah, and you did,
and I agree.
No. You had to be challenged. And that is the emphasis of my frustration, where when somebody is at the top of his game, playing really well, I feel like the cracks are sometimes smoothed over. Oh, he had a bad game. But you know what? He plays fantastic all the rest of the time.
But that's
like,
the point.
No.
There's one really bad game
I think he's having more questionable performance as a whole. And exactly to your point, where this team now currently consists of Robertson and Trent Alexander-Arnold, I feel like he's getting the lion's share of the plaudits when actually that unit has come together in a sort of a cohesive way that makes him look very good, but not great. I think all I'm saying is, yeah, I think we all agree he's in the team, but let's just temper
the
excitement.
He wasn't in my team, by the way.
Really?
No, I'm joking.
let's just temper the excitement, and also let's not use an example where you're letting Sissoko go through.
All right.
As the crowning moment, right?
Let's round through this. So we all agree Virgil van Dijk's in the team.
Sam, you agree with that?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. 100%. Yeah.
Cool. Marvin, who's your other centre-back?
I don't think it's as easy to pick. I don't know whether the guys agree with me, but I don't think it's necessarily set in stone. But I think Laporte for City
yes,
is probably,
that was
probably
my
the main yeah. man. Yeah.
And I've liked him more. Just want to put that out there.
The thing I like about Laporte...
He's a terrific player to Laporte.
The thing I like about Laporte is I always feel that defenders shouldn't be seen. If you're seeing a defender too much, it's because he's doing something wrong.
Yeah, without doubt.
And you don't really notice Laporte very often. Yeah. You don't really notice him, and that for me says he's doing something really well. Yeah. Cool. So we all agree on Laporte.
And you know what? I don't know. Did you watch the City documentary?
Yes.
What still gets me is he was just there for the taking. City said, company's just not fit enough anymore. We need a centre back. They had a list. Laporte was on it. 52 million, I think, was his buyout.
Get
they
it
paid
done.
It.
Yeah.
And now he's emerged as the best centre back at that club and one of the best in the Prem at the moment. So it's almost like this is going back to what we're talking about the United board not being able to get it done. Right?
Just got some breaking news. Everton investigating alleged incident which appears to show Jordan Pickford involved in a fracas on the street. So midfield now. Marvin. So we're going 4-3-3. So who's the first of your three?
So in the three, I picked David Silva.
Really?
Yeah, I really, really like him.
You will not find a bigger Silva fan than me, but this year he's been poor.
No, I don't think he has been poor. I actually think he's the person that's made it okay for KD. You're going to laugh at the rest of my picks,
I probably
by the
am,
way.
Yeah.
But I was watching City, and let me be clear, like both the Silvers have made it into my team, right? But I actually think... Without him, Liverpool win the league.
That David Silva?
Yeah.
Justify that.
Well, I think KDB has just not been about
this year, right? Yeah, yeah. I think he's had lots of injuries. And I think Silva has stepped into that role of being the person that keeps the ball ticking and moving. But also, he's got the killer pass. And he had a really difficult season with personal history last year. Mm. And I think he's been seamless. I've loved him the whole way through. I know he is a personal favourite of mine, but I've really liked him. Plus, I actually struggled with the midfield. There's lots of players.
I agree. Defensive strikers are quite easy.
There's lots of midfielders that have played well for a period and then dropped away.
Agreed.
And I just think when he's at the top of the game, I think he's one of the best.
I struggle with my list of candidates for midfield. The bar had to be really brought down because it wasn't easy. G.
Yeah, so yeah, I'm with you on the Devon Silva. I don't think he's been poor. I just don't think he's been
outstanding. Sorry, poor maybe.
But Bernardo Silva was definitely my first choice. I think he's the actual reason that City haven't missed KDB. Sorry to contradict you, Mark, but I think he's the reason.
You see, I picked him, but I picked Bernardo
in the front three.
In the front three, because I feel like, from what I've seen, City have played Sterling, Aguero and Bernardo.
Well, this is why you messed me up, because when I was doing it as a 4-4-2, I was having people like Sterling and Silva as attacking midfielders wide, as opposed to out-and-out strikers.
No, I get it, but Jordan, I mean, no one plays 4-4-2
anymore. All right, whatever. So you're going for Bernardo Silva. Sam?
Decore for me, Watford.
He's on my list of candidates.
Absolutely outstanding. I think in a team which actually are quite strong in midfield, Watford, I think he's really been the shining light. It's quite surprising that he's not had a bigger move actually in his career, but I think he's really been the outstanding player for Watford. He featured again at Old Trafford at the weekend, played very well, scored a good goal. I think he's excellent.
And Decore is in my team. He's in my team as well.
Okay, so I would put him in as well. So we've got three. Would you object to Decore being one of the three?
He wasn't in my team, but I'm winning. But I've voted anyway. So
cool, I was going to say.
I'm just being polite.
You know, I'm just going to happen anyway. All right, second of your three, Sam.
Declan Rice for me. I think he's been excellent.
He's not on my list, interesting. Go on.
I think he's a player that's going to no doubt have a very, very rich future.
Why?
Because I think that...
Is it because he's English and he's young, Sam?
No, I think it's because he's shown...
Sam, are you sure it's not because he's English and he's young?
It's because he's shown he can dictate games from the middle of the park for West Ham.
I've been watching the last couple of games to try and... I don't think he's not a good player, but I've been trying to see what everyone else is saying about him, and I see a good prospect. I don't see someone that... He's reading the game really well.
I think I think you're being a bit harsh, because I think players like that you don't necessarily spot. I mean, if you were to say, what did Claude Makélélé do? Would you really have been able to say, well, he had a world-class game every game, but actually he kept things ticking over in a magnificent way? It's a slightly extreme example, but you know what I mean.
I think
Declan Rice has been a real sort of stalwart for West Ham. I think I wasn't convinced by him when he was playing centre-back a lot last season. He seems to have a lot of mistakes in him. He's been a bit more assured this season. And there's no doubt he's going to go for a big sum of money eventually at some point, whether it's this summer or maybe the summer after. And I think if you've got the likes of Man City, Man United, possibly even some of the big European clubs after you, you must be doing something right.
Okay, let's rattle through these. G, who is your second pick for midfield three?
I said you're going for Fraser at Bournemouth.
He's on my list of candidates.
I think he has a really good season. I like someone who kind of has that creativity from that midfield. I've always liked the way Bournemouth played, but I think he almost added a new dimension to it. And I like his hook up with Wilson as well. So yeah, Fraser
for you, Marvin. Who's second of your three?
So I had Decore, Silva, and one other. Do you want the one other?
No, not yet. So, all right, so we've got Decore in. I don't think David's going to make it in the team, actually. I've got on my list here someone I'll hope Arsenal buy in the summer, actually. Milojevic of Crystal Palace.
You say that every year.
I think he's slyly another player that's kind of just not spectacular, but good player. Keeps the ball, doesn't give it away often, takes a good pen. And he's quite firm. He's not a lightweight in the middle. So he was someone that I thought was, again, as we say,
ten goals this season.
Yeah,
penalties,
penalties granted. But
saying everything you're saying about him if he didn't take a pen?
I would, yeah, because I think in the years we've agreed where the bar for midfielders is quite low. I think he's someone that he's not lightweight. He's quite strong on the ball. I think his distribution is good without being amazing. I think he keeps the ball pretty well. And I think he's been a key part of Palace's, for their level, relative success this year. So he was my shout. So no one's having Milojevic this year. Marvin says no. Gabriel says no.
I would take Fernandinho over Milojevic.
Yeah, I would as well, but I want to get on to the third one.
Okay, so we have to agree on a second one.
So what have we had?
Bernardo Silva's got to be in this team, but is he going to be in midfield or is he going to be up front?
Well, it depends on whether you've got where you put Bernardo, right? He's in my team, so if you want to put him in the midfield,
is he not more midfielder than he is attacking? Sort of in the
City play him quite advanced.
Mm. I thought they played him like
where Sterling.
I've seen Sterling and Sane and Bernardo Silva play.
No, I've not seen that.
You haven't seen that?
I think certainly Sane's taken a bit more of a bench because of Silva, and Mahrez is taking a bit more of a bench because of Silva.
All right, he's going to midfield. Let's put Bernardo Silva in midfield.
I think he has to, because there's obvious options in the front three. Yeah, to be honest.
That as well. Doucouré is the second of the three. Madison, anybody?
No, nah. He faded for me. Could have been, but
are we doing the third midfielder now?
Third one, yeah. Who's your third?
Pogba.
What I was going to say is, for me, it's Madison or Pogba for me.
What's he got? He's got double digits in both assists and goals.
Oh, hell no.
I squeeze Pogba in. Sorry to cut you, Marvin.
No, you're not squeezing him in. He deserves to be there. Well, if the benchmark is low.
I squeezed him in. I'll tell you why. Because although I think he's had some really, really poor games, his really, really good games, for me, justify him being in.
So he's in the season or 2 months?
Well, how many midfielders have had really good seasons throughout? There's not many, so we're going to go with...
Fraser's done it throughout the whole... He's had patches as well.
Pogba's best games have been better than Fraser's best games.
Okay, but Fraser's been more consistent than Pogba.
I would say Pogba's got more 8, 9s out of 10s than Fraser.
Fernandinho, boom.
Fernandinho hasn't played 15 minutes in the last 6 weeks of football.
I think he's missed a lot of football this year as well.
I love him as well, but this is what we're talking about. There's patches, and I think Pogba's had more purple patches than crap patches. You'll never back him. You've got standards.
I'm coming to the other United. I'm coming to the other United fan on the panel.
I absolutely hear what you're saying, but I think I'm so disappointed with the fact that Pogba hasn't done it consistently that he wouldn't make my team, because I think he's better than that. Don't get me wrong, he's scored a lot of goals.
Don't judge him by Pogba standards. Judge him by midfielders this year standards.
Well, it's a bit of a small pool to choose from, to be honest. Like, João Moutinho would have been my other pick for Wolves. I think he's been excellent. But I think if you want to go with Pogba, then I would argue it. But what's the point?
Well, I'm putting him in. Paul Pogba's the third in the midfield there.
So you just get to choose now.
I do. Yeah.
It's really boring.
And running out of time. Front three now. Marvin, first of your three.
Oh, got to be Aguero's the first choice in terms of the middle.
Anyone disagree with that?
No, I pick Aguero.
Love him.
Aguero's in. G, your second forward?
Mane.
Anyone disagree with that?
I agree with that.
I mean, if Bernardo's there, then I'm fine. If Bernardo's in the midfield, then I'm fine with that.
Yeah, the midfield is Bernardo Silva, Doucouré and Pogba.
Yeah, fine.
Okay. You're all good with Mane. Okay. Even though Salah's got more goals than Mane.
Salah's not did make my team.
Okay.
Or mine.
Is Aubameyang in anybody's team? He's not in my team. I'm just saying he might win Golden Boot. But that might, you know. No?
Well, it depends. How many teams in the bottom 10 has Arsenal got to play?
I see what you did there. Yeah. And is Harry Kane in anybody's three?
No.
Okay, so we've got Aguero, Mane. I've got also on the list here Wilson.
No, it doesn't make it. Okay. Honorable mention, but doesn't make it.
Again, patchy, right?
He's got 13 goals this year.
No, solid. It's good.
So who are your final picks then?
Sterling's mine.
Yeah. Okay,
sorry, I've got Sterling on the other list. Yeah. Okay, so front three of Sterling, Mane and Aguero. Okay, that's quite a good team. So our team.
And I think Sterling should win player of the year, by the way.
Is he your pick player of the year?
He's my pick as well.
Is that yours?
Yeah, he is, yeah.
Do you all stick with Sterling if Liverpool win the league?
Yeah, I probably would. At this stage.
Even more so.
Really?
Yeah, probably, yeah.
If Liverpool in the league, you'd pick Sterling over Van Dijk.
I'm not going for
Jordan, this is one of those things where you're going to keep putting we're out of time and you're going to keep putting scenarios where we go, okay, but I'm just making sure
the scientists and the XG lovers and the statisticians on Twitter would love Van Dijk to win player of the year, but anyone who really likes creative football would put Sterling in ahead of him.
So he's winning by default because he's an attacker and Van Dijk's a defender. That's harsh.
I'd like to add as well, because I'm still annoyed about this Pogba thing, Ruben Neves.
Yeah.
Who had what? Two touches in the opposing season.
We shouldn't discount him, but no.
Performance as a midfielder, he's been consistent.
Makes you wonder why the midfield options are so sparse, doesn't it?
It's weird
that this has been so few consistent performers.
I've just noticed as well, Vertonghen was on my list of defenders that didn't get a mention as well, but we've done it. So our team of the year is Edison in goal, right back was Trent Alexander-Arnold, left back was Robertson. Centre backs were Van Dijk and Laporte. Three in midfield: Bernardo Silva, Paul Pogba, and Doucouré. In the front three of Aguero, Mane, and Sterling. That's a very, very good. It's a very, very good team. And you've all gone for Raheem Sterling as your player of the year. Guys, we're well over time, so thanks for coming on the pod this week. Marvin, Sam, and G. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast on, we're on iTunes, we're on Spotify. Follow us on across all of our socials. We're on Instagram, we're on Twitter, and we're on Facebook. Until next week, peace.